Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and our Warren.
Heard on 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. David North Martino.
Oh, my real name.
Yeah.
Yes, I am here. Wow.
Yeah. I'm using your real name. You come back from karate, I've got to be careful.
Yes.
Hey, what was that big jump kick there I saw there? That was pretty amazing, hey?
Yeah, well, that was like 10 years ago, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you couldn't lift it.
I could do it, but landing, you know, I don't want to blow out an ACL.
ACL? Probably crack the ground. What are you talking about?
Yeah, now that's true, too.
But that looked pretty cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my wife took that photo.
I just saw it, like, today, and I was like, wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You're like that movie star, you know. All this moving, and that was crazy. I have to be careful now. I have to
know.
Show some respect. I'm going to get beat up here. I don't know. It's going to be karate soup here.
That picture helped me. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus you had hair.
Yeah.
What happened to your hair?
Yes. Yeah, right. I don't know. I lost most of it in the 90s or whatever. And, yeah, in the war. Yeah,
the war. I lost it in the war.
That was like 2000. I think that was like 2008 or something. So yeah.
Yeah.
A little more hair back then. Yeah.
No, I'll say. But it was shaved. But it was good. I mean, you looked good. You should use that as all your pictures now.
Yeah, that's gonna be my picture from now on.
Don't let them see. That's kind of my thought, you know, after that last doing this picture for that book.
I'm working on it, okay? I still have some COVID weight.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's what it is.
What was the weight before COVID?
I'm blaming the pandemic.
But there was weight before COVID. What is it?
That was something else.
The cheeseburger weight.
It was cheeseburger weight. Exactly.
Well, anyway, that's enough of that. It's meanness, you know. Mean person you are. But, well, today we've got a publisher with us, and they've got all sorts of books out, and we've kind of done different publishers before, so let's find out what's going on in the publishing world.
All right.
I need to know. I need to get a book out, you know, see if I can get published here.
That's right.
So we've got the runners of Bridget Gate Press, and so that's Stephen and Heather Ventura. So thank you for being here, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, hopefully you say that at the end of the show.
We'll see.
You know, they might be hanging up on us. Listen, so what makes you get into the publishing world in a world like today? Like what drew you into that business?
What made us decide to do it when we did, I think, is probably partially insanity. But we both grew up surrounded by books, always reading, always at the library, always at the bookstore. And I always wanted to own, and listen, this may be a woman's cliche, but I've always wanted to own that bookstore with a coffee house that had a cat in it, but also a publishing company. And Steve always wanted to run a publishing company and edit. And so we'd been married for a while. All the kids grown up, left, adults, had their own problems. And, you know, we just thought, instead of just saying one day, why don't we just do it? And I think this is where the insanity plays in. I don't know if you hit a certain age and you forget that you like sleep or having Saturday mornings to yourself. But I, you know, we were just like, hey, we have the time, we have the funds, and let's quit talking about it and let's just do it.
Yeah.
And that's how we kind of came to be, is instead of just being like, hey, one day that'd be a fun dream, we're like, hey, nobody's getting younger, and now's the time.
Yeah, like Shia LaBeouf says.
Well, I don't know. I'm getting younger.
You're getting younger.
I'm getting younger.
You found the fountain of youth, or you got a vampire friend?
No, I just keep putting old pictures up. And I keep getting younger. Well, so was this everything you expected it to be? Like, Steve, let's hear from you. Was this everything you thought it would be?
Everything and then some. And I will say, publishing has been a learning curve, and we're still on it. We're learning new things every week, and you know, it's been an adventure, and sometimes it does get a little overwhelming, you know, with everything that needs to be done, but yeah, it's great. I would say if anybody else is thinking about it, go for it. I mean, we've had a lot of good experiences. We've met a lot of great people, authors and editors, et cetera.
What would you expect from an author if someone is never been published before? Okay, so not an experienced mm-hmm. person, not a person that's had books out,
sure.
but someone that's brand new to it, and they think they've got a book. What would you say they should do first before submitting it, or what should they look for in their writing before submitting to publishers?
Well, here's what I'll say, and I think sometimes I don't know if we're all that different from indie publishers, but I think indie publishers are kind of a step different from even larger indie presses or traditional publishers for sure. The first thing you want to make sure of is the press you're going to send something to open for submissions. Is
right.
Check their website, check and see if they have anything about an open submission period or a closed submission period. And some of us don't. Some of us just kind of leave it loose. Here's what I will say. Take your shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely send the email. Send the email. And I think it is impossible to ask an author to give a one paragraph synopsis of a book they've just written thousands upon thousands of words in.
Right.
But do your best. Give it your best. What's the book about? Where does the book take you? I always encourage people to put content warnings if they have a book that has a lot of. And here are my big ones. If you've got a lot of on-the-page sexual assault, a lot of on-the-page child death,
yeah.
or suicide, you know, include that in your synopsis, either at the beginning or the end. And most publishing companies, I think, want the first couple chapters if it's a full-size
yeah.
novel. Just do it. Just do it.
You know,
the worst thing that's going to happen is you're not going to get an answer or somebody's going to say no, but you've got to keep trying, because if you've
yeah.
written it, I firmly believe somebody out there wants to read it.
You know, and one thing I would like to say, you know, I've seen a lot of writers talking about, you know, they've got to hire an editor and they've got to send it off to a beta reader and they've got to do this, and all that stuff is great. And I don't want to disparage or take away from that, but also would like to say, now, of course, it's different if you're going to self-publish, but if you're sending your work to a publisher, don't overly stress and kill yourself about that. Because here's the thing, we're going to edit your book. We've got editors, we're going to edit it, we're going to proof it, we're going to format it. So yeah, of course, you should make sure that your story or your novel is as good as you can get it. You know, do your own self-editing. If you want to have a friend or someone, or maybe a beta reader that's willing to work with you, sure, that doesn't hurt. But don't go out there and spend tons and tons and tons of money on hiring editors to do all that, because we're going to do that for you. You know, that's our job. We're going.
Right. Don't stress.
Yeah.
Don't stress the m-dash and the comma. just to do your best. Do your best. Review your work. Edit your own work.
Right.
It's great to send it around to trusted people who you know will give you honest feedback. And listen, I can fall for a 3-sentence pitch as fast as anybody else. So try to make your synopsis or your pitch as tight as you can.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And as meaningful as you can to you.
Yeah.
Think about what you love the most about your story and make sure that that comes through, because you don't have a lot of space to sell yourself.
And I assume with sample chapters, you'd want it to be in standard manuscript format or something of that nature.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Standard.
Standard. Yeah. And please do not do any special formatting. Anything, just straight up, like she said, you know,
right.
Simple tabs, Times New Roman is great. 12 pitch. Don't really do anything much more than that. Cause if we do take your book, we're going to have to format it. And the more special formatting you do, that's more of a headache for us because we've got to reformat it and pull it back out. So just do straight up.
Well, it's more of a, yeah.
You like pictures?
Not those type of pictures.
Yeah, those are those dirty pictures, you know. You got some good authors. I know, Colin Leonard Colley, I really like that guy.
Yeah. And it's hard to beat his accent, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. He's an amazing character. He was one of the most fun to interview because he was shy in a way, but yet there was a lot to get out of him. You know what I mean?
Yes. He's got like a treasure trove of Irish folklore just kind of waiting to be mined. Every time I talk to him, I feel like I learn a little bit more. I enjoy all of our authors. We haven't had one yet that I wouldn't resign for another book.
Oh, come on. There's got to be one.
Knock on all the wood. This better not be jinxing me, but knock on all the wood.
There's got to be a bad one in there somewhere. We want to get some gossip here.
You won't get it out of me. I love them all. I was just telling a friend of mine the other day, every book we release is my favorite book. And every time I redo something or marketing about a book from the backlist, I'm like, oh, this is my favorite book. Oh, this is my favorite color. Oh, cover. This is my favorite author. Every time. She says, every time you call me, you say this is your favorite book. And I'm like, well, they are.
And just as a kind of a little tidbit for y'all, I've had to learn since we've begun to kind of keep Heather out of the editing process. Because
Heather has. Listen, we almost got divorced. Yeah, we almost got divorced and shut down the press with our first novella. That was rough. I cried.
Yeah, Heather has a tendency to read the first draft. She falls in love with it. Then it comes to me. So I'm starting to work on the editing process. And she takes a look at my notes and goes, why are you want to change that? Why are you doing that? Why do we need to take that out? I don't want to change anything. We're going to publish it as is. And I'm like, no, there has to be editing. Yeah.
Steve's the editor. Steve's the true content editor. But I do. When I fall in love with a manuscript and I'm like, I don't want to change anything. Steve's like, well, there's ways we can make some of this stronger and add this and take this part out. But we threw down, it was A Man in Winter by Katie Marie.
Oh, yeah.
And I forget what section it was, but there were a few paragraphs that Steve wanted to talk to Katie about and completely rework, and I lost my mind. I remember I was standing in the hallway crying, and I told him I'd leave him if he made her change it and that he was ruining the book. And so he finally got me settled down and said, why don't I talk to Katie? We'll let Katie sit with it, see what she says, and you can take to the bank she agreed with him. She read those edits and she's like, I think this is great. Let me work with it. Let me have a couple weeks and I want to rework this section. And then I'm going to rework this section that ties in with this and I'll send you back what I've got. And I was like, okay, they're all going to take your side. Then you do all the content editing because I do. I fall in love with a manuscript and I'm like, it's perfect. Just fix the commas and let's take it to print. But Steve's always looking for, you know, how can you empathize with a character more, or what drives a wedge between you and a character more? You know, what can you use for stronger foreshadowing, or what do you want to give away?
How can we tighten this dialogue up?
Yeah, he's a meanie. Yeah. But they love him.
Brute.
Yeah, they love him. You know, the authors that work with him are like, I want Steve to do the next one. And I'm like, whatever. That's fine. Take Steve's side.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Don't talk to me.
Yeah, that's fine. I send your royalty checks, but whatever.
Yeah, they might take a long time to get there. So you guys are primarily looking for horror, dark fantasy, poetry, and romance, it said. So romance fits with horror?
Oh, it does for me. So to me, this is a dark road. Get ready. To me, the two genres, they explore, and of course, this depends on your author. It depends on your subgenre. It depends on what you're after. Both horror and romance really dig into emotions. And I think one of the things that draws us to horror is our emotional response to the story. whether it's fear or dread or, you know, in some cases you're repulsed. In some cases, you're just absolutely terrified and you have to sleep with the light on. Thank you, Stephen King. But it's, you know, romance can be the same way, though hopefully it's not all horror and dread, but it digs up feelings. Like sometimes it'll be betrayal or something you didn't expect to happen, or joy and happiness. And horror does the same thing. I consider them both miners of emotion. They're both miners going down in the mine and trying to dig up an emotional response from the reader. And I think if done right, both of them do it really well together. And that's one of the reasons when Ray came to us about Lady Madness Press, I was like, oh yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. And Steve's more of a business guy, so he's like, hold on, let's run the numbers. Let's talk about a budget. And I'm like, let's not.
Yeah.
Let's just do it. I think erotic horror is exactly what we want to do. So, well,
you know, and when it comes to romance, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, that is one branch itself, erotic horror. And we have published, I think, Marionette is one in that genre as well. But think of what makes some of the great romances so powerful, the sense of loss or possible loss or
right.
tragedy. And I'll bring up Wuthering Heights, which a lot of people look at and think of that as, you know, gothic, of course.
We're talking about horrible characters.
But also horror. Yeah. I mean, because there's such a strong emotional feel to that.
Heathcliff and Kathy are so awful to each other. And that's one of my top five favorite books. And I reread it almost every year. And every year I reread it and I get older and I'm like, these are horrible people. They're horrible. The things they do and say to each other are absolutely horrifying. And so it's the same kind of that. I grew up reading, well, my mom also read to us every night, fairy tales, but also I fell in love with gothic novels and anything, gothic romance, dark gothic, horror. I love that kind of feeling of dread where the atmosphere and the scenery is like its own character in the book. And so I kind of feel like that. I feel like emotions sometimes are like the third character in a scene with your two main characters. To me, they're very interconnected. And I'm always so surprised when people from each genre are like, oh gosh, no, I'd never read romance, or oh gosh, I'd never read horror. And I just think,
right.
Man, if you've read any of the top 10 best-selling romance novels, you have read a horror novel, whether you know it or not. You know, any character that has their heart torn out.
And that's one of the things.
Horrible.
A lot of people think horror, and they're thinking Halloween or Friday the 13th, or, you know, any of other clones, you know, slasher movies and all that.
Or just Stephen King.
Right. That is just one small,
so much more.
That's just one small part of the genre. There's so much out there. And that's why I think some of those great tragic romances, I mean, there are elements in there. The pain, the loss, the idea, you know, things that have gone wrong, those are all strong elements of horror. Yeah.
The fear. I mean, is there anything more horrifying than losing somebody you love as much as you love yourself?
No, I mean,
yeah.
Hold on here. Stephen King, let me write that down. Is he an author?
You may have heard of him now or then. I have.
Who?
Oh, yeah. I have a Stephen King doesn't know it, but he and I have a relationship that spawns back to maybe 10.
Right.
And we broke up in middle school because it scared me so much that I actually, in the middle of the night, much to my mother's own personal horror, took my bed off my frame. I also covered all the mirrors in my room and I took all the curtains down off my windows so I could see out the window. And I turned all the lights in the whole house on, including the basement and her bedroom while she was sleeping. And I was like, listen, we can never turn the lights off again. And to this day, I have never finished it. It is the only Stephen King book I have read that I have not been able to finish.
I thought you were going to say, to this day, you still got the lights on.
Right. Listen, Steve knows when we read, because we co-read books together sometimes. And if we read a scary one, Steve knows we've either got to stop long before sundown or he's going to sleep with the light on. Like, that's a real thing in our house. I'm not afraid to admit it.
No, well, there you go. You know, I never did that as a kid. I remember trying to peanut butter our kitchen table.
Oh!
like a cake, and I don't think they like that too much.
No, that's horrible.
Pretty much
all the oil.
I got
and
halfway
butter?
Done.
Oh,
yeah, it was great.
Oh my gosh,
wonderful.
I would have thrown the table away. Steve would have come home from work and found it in the front yard.
Yeah.
With the peanut butter still
that's
on
right,
it.
With the peanut butter still on it, I would have taken one look at that and been like, "Nope, we're eating on the floor picnic style for a while."
Yeah, I should say, I wonder what she had to, my mother had to go through to clean that.
That would have been
that's
horrible.
Not fun.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. What a terrible kid.
This is like the beginning of a horror story.
Yeah.
I peanut buttered half of the kitchen table.
Well, I would have done more, but I ran out of peanut butter.
Oh, my gosh. You ruined lunch.
I was thinking like a cake. It wasn't an evil thing. I mean, my evil started maybe a year or two later.
Right, after it was inspired by the peanut butter incident.
Yeah.
That's terrible. It, you know.
Then I throw the cat on the table.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. They didn't lock me up. I know. So, listen, you guys like Halloween, I guess. Is Halloween a big deal because you're into horror and dark fantasy and all this?
So, what do you guys...
Are you dressed up for Halloween? What are you going as?
You know what? We haven't dressed up for Halloween in 7.5 years because we lived out on a ranch and nobody trick-or-treats unless we were going to a party. But I don't know. This year we may dress up because we're back in town and we're going to – I mean, my neighborhood's got a trick-or-treat event like every day starting Saturday until Halloween, and I am in it. I decorated for Halloween on July 1st. I am ready.
Wow.
Yeah, it is real. It's a whole – Halloween just isn't a day here. It's a whole quarter. It's a whole season.
So what do you think it is about Halloween? Like, what is Halloween? And why do you think so many people get into it? What is it about that that day in particular, you think?
Well, I mean, listen, I have a lot of personal opinions about this because, and I think part of this is because I've got Irish ancestry, but if you had that great-great Irish grandmother who still carved turnips even now in her new home, there's kind of a certain element of the Day of the Dead spookiness, especially if they were Irish Catholic, with All Saints Day and All Souls Day. And so I can't really speak for anybody else, but Halloween was always a really big deal in our house. Growing up, my mom made all of our costumes. We would tell spooky stories, and my grandmother, my father's mother, I grew up hearing ghost stories from her every time I spent the night out there. She'd have a new ghost story. And so, I loved it. And like Halloween was just like starting October 1st, it seemed like at school. Tell me if you guys are old enough to remember this, because I was talking to a younger cousin of mine who swears they never did this at her school. But did you remember how you had music class, art class, but like starting in late September, October, in music class in elementary school, did you learn spooky songs? Like
no,
the ghost of John?
I didn't. I can't remember.
Like the ghost of John? Yes, you did. Did you go to school? My cousin and I went to different school districts. I was appalled.
Well, I didn't go to the Church of Satan school. I got to know him afterwards.
Or afterwards, okay. As an adult, yeah. We learned spooky songs, and we listened to Night on Bald Mountain and learned how to sing, what's that song, The Ghost of John, and there's a whole bunch of, like, kids' spooky Halloween songs from the 70s. And
the Monster Mash?
Yeah! Listen, we danced to Monster Mash in music class, and in art class, we were drawing, like, we would turn on Night of Bald Mountain and draw pictures inspired by the music, and, like, maybe it was just the school I went to, but we went all out. We had Halloween costume parades, we trick-or-treated older classrooms, and
wow,
I mean, our school, it was a big deal. I did go to the School of Satan. I don't know.
Did you drink a lot? Were they doing drugs in school? Like what?
I mean, I was still, you know, 8. I don't recall, but it was just, I don't know. Halloween was a big deal. It was almost a bigger deal than, you know, winter holidays, because I think because you're in school during Halloween, you know, you don't get the day off, which was, I was always horrified by, but I don't know. Halloween was always just a big deal. And Steve grew up in New Orleans, where I swear it's always Halloween.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
There's scary stories all the time, I should say that.
Yeah, scary stories all the time. And the cemeteries.
Yeah.
are all above ground.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's an enhancement of death in New Orleans.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's very.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, it seems very dark.
Mm-hmm.
One of our big things growing up was, I'm sure you've seen pictures, at least if you haven't been there, of the cemeteries in New Orleans, all the above ground crypts and everything.
Crypts,
and statues.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big thing. I grew up in New Orleans, and that was a big thing then, was daring each other late at night to run, to hop the fence on one side and run through the cemetery to the other side. Some kids would do it. Most of us were like, nope, not doing that.
Oh, yeah, they got a hole.
Did they have to be naked?
Too sure that something's going to come out of one of those crypts and grab me. It's like, nope.
Well, and it doesn't help.
Was it not as dangerous at that time?
It doesn't help that there are all these stories. Every graveyard's got a story of, you know, we believe this crypt's really empty. You know, and Steve's got that in his own family. We went to go do, we were there doing some family genealogy, and we stopped at the crypt, and there are like three extra people listed on the crypt that I didn't have in our family genealogy notes. And then we went and talked to the cemetery office, and she goes, well, his name's on the crypt, but he's not here. And I go, what do you mean he's not here? And he's like, well, it says in the notes that he was scheduled to be dropped off on this date, but he never showed up. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is where horror stories start. I looked at Steve, and I was like, we got to go. Like, it's getting dark outside. I got to get back to the hotel room and turn all the lights on. We're missing a body from your family that only goes, like, two generations back. And I'm like, this is how zombie stories start. Every single one of them starts with a body's missing.
He's in the back making coffee.
Right?
So, you know, in these stories then, what is the most important thing that you look for in a story? I would imagine it's character.
I'll tell you, I think it depends on the writer. Sometimes it's character, sometimes it's atmosphere. Sometimes is it a slow burn and you made me wait for it, or is it a fast page turner? I love them all. But I'll tell you, for me, my mother, and I mentioned this earlier, but my mother read to us every night, no matter how late she got home from work, no matter who was sick. It was like we read at night. If we were on vacation, if we were away from each other, she would call us and read to us at night. It was the thing that we did not skip. Because of that, when I read books now, I often start hearing my mother read the story in my own head. So for me, what I'm really looking for in a book, and this seems very elusive, but does my mother start reading the story? In every book we have published, I have heard my mother's voice at one point in the story, reading it out loud to me. And I think if I were to try to put on paper what that is, I think what that is the point in a story where I realize the atmosphere is big, the characters are big, and something very spooky is going to happen. Whether it's like a spook scare going to happen or like a slow burn dread. Something very emotional will happen in this story.
So yeah, I agree with everything Heather's saying, but I would also add, and I would tell writers this too, anybody listening, characters and how believable they are and how they resonate with us emotionally, I think that's the most important, in my opinion, element of a story. Because I mean, you could have the world's greatest plot. You could have great ideas. You've done all your research, so everything is realistic. But if the characters feel wooden, or they're doing things that nobody would really do, or they just don't resonate with you, they're flat, you're not going to enjoy the story as much. It's the characters that really, I think, really, really drive it.
But, you know, but here's the thing, and Steve and I talk about this all the time. No, I'm interrupting.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Don't get frightened.
You know, it's so subjective, though. You know what I mean? Like, what I find to be a deliciously dreadful atmosphere, someone else may find, you know, gross and boring. And characters can be the same way. Like, Steve's always like, I'm having a hard time believing this character would act this way. And I'll fall for it every time. I'm one of those people where you can suspend my disbelief usually 2 minutes in and keep it no matter how outrageous it gets. Steve, he's got a saying where it's like, if Heather has been pulled out of the movie, something has gone awry. because I do. I drink it like elixir. But it can be subjective. Like, a character that I find believable, Steve may not. So when people are like, what's your real tug? All I can tell you is it's a feeling I have. And I know authors want the magic formula. Right. And I think the magic formula is this. If you believe in your story and you have written this character in a way where you are gutted when something bad happens to this character, or you are gutted when something outrageous happens and the character has to regroup, then probably you will find a publisher who will feel the same way. And you will find readers who feel the same way. But, you know, people are so different. Even, I mean, my sister and I are so different. And we grew up in the same household with the same people. You know, we're all so different in what intrigues us and what we live for and what's important to us. And I just got to tell you, if you pour your heart into it, it shows.
Yeah.
It does to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like, you know, even if we can't publish you, even if
somebody will.
Even if you've gotten 100 rejections, somebody will, or self-publish. And I hate to say this because I'm a publisher, but I got to tell you what, if you can figure out the magic for self-publishing, leave us all behind and do it. Because if you want to eventually quit your day job, that's where the money is. Steve hates it when I tell this, but I tell this to all our authors. Right, I'm like, listen, when you're ready to go out on your own, I'll teach you everything I know. But, you know, quit giving me half your money. But
yeah, yeah. Just sleep with people and make money. That's what I do. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, I leave my books in the bathrooms in all the malls and sell a lot that way. Well, no, I think characters are really important because, in the sense that that's what people remember.
Right. Right. You
know, the story is, of course, but I think it's right. I mean, people like Sherlock Holmes, like that,
right.
That type of a character stays with generation after generation. Like if you could get the right character,
yeah,
and it's magic.
Oh, yeah.
Because it can go on forever.
It is, because I mean, like, Steve's rereading Lord of the Rings now, you know, because of the magic of the characters. Steve rereads the whole series
every couple of years.
Yeah. And it's the characters. He loves the story, you know, but it's the characters, and it's, you've got to have, even if they're morally gray, you can still empathize with a character.
Right.
Nobody is a saint all the time.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling people. and I can't convince them. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
I have a friend who says, that's what I keep telling my probation officer.
Yeah.
Nobody's good all
every
the time.
Every time I get a new one, they go missing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say, you know, a great story, you can have a perfectly evil and loathsome character that the readers or the viewers just love. I mean, and this is not books, but I'll give an example, the series Breaking Bad. The main character of that show was really, if you really look at it, was a horrible person, just an awful person.
Yeah.
But you love, people love the show and they can't wait for the next episode. It's like, got to see what Walt's up to now. And it's like, but that's,
it's true. Oh,
exactly. But that's what having a really great, powerful character will do.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even out of that, like, you know, the Better Call Saul,
right.
You know, that lawyer was a classic. That character really grabbed people and they made a whole series out of that.
Yeah, the whole spin-out.
You can do it if you connect, right. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you guys are avoiding, because you're avoiding, you're not really doing splatter, like you're not having all this, or are you? I'm throwing that out because I'm not sure.
Well, we're not opposed to it, but we haven't, generally we haven't done what they call extreme horror or really hardcore horror. We're not opposed to it, but that's generally not our cup of tea. But that doesn't mean we won't.
We gentled into it with the anthology Blood in the Soil, Terror on the Wind, which is a Western.
Right.
And it definitely has splatter elements. It's certainly not as splatter or as extreme as I have read.
Right.
But it's...
You save that behavior for home.
Right. Right. We save that for behind closed doors. That's not public behavior.
Right.
And so, and I wouldn't say that I'm opposed to it, but I would say that it's not something I pick up off a shelf when I see it in a bookstore. When we were getting ready to start that anthology, I did read two that are definitely classed as splatter. because I didn't want to be shocked when I read some of those short stories about how extreme they might get. And it's not my favorite genre, but I will tell you, it's a very cathartic genre. Do we do events? Well, we did just do two book signings for one of the books, but we haven't tabled any of the conventions yet. When we went to Stoker's, we just went as guests. Didn't we, Steve? We didn't table at Stoker's.
Yeah, and we just went to the StokerCon one time so
yeah.
far. So,
we hope to.
You have to get...
That's it. We hope to. We kind of jumped off the deep end and decided to publish two books a month this year, which doesn't leave a lot of time for eating or sleeping or going to the grocery store, let alone doing book events.
Right.
But when we settle down, we're hoping to go do more cons for sure, because they always look like so much fun. And we had a blast when we were at Stoker when it was in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is a great way to network and meet people.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
More than anything else, I think it's the best thing. I haven't been to StokerCon either. I was thinking next year, but I've been to StokerCon.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's bad.
Oh, that's different. Yeah. That's different.
And World Fantasy Convention is in Kansas City right now, this week and this weekend.
And we would love to go, but we just, between our day jobs and other things going on, we can't do it.
But that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of work, but it is one of the best times to meet people face to face. When we were at Stoker, that's when we met Zach face to face, wasn't it, Steve? Was it Stoker?
Zachary Denver? Rosenberg.
Yeah, yeah. Rosenberg. And several authors, actually, that we met face to face. And what we learned was, when we go and I meet somebody that I've read for a while and love, I will squeal like a fangirl instead of introduce myself. Oh. Yeah. So, and that's only mildly embarrassing the first time it happens. And then I just rolled with it. But yeah, I literally squealed like an 8-year-old girl when I met Linda Addison in a hallway at StokerCon. So
she's very nice.
Yeah. She was very kind when I couldn't make words happen. And I did the same thing. I recently met Walter Williams in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the only thing I could say to him was, please stand right here. I have to find my husband. And, like, that's it. Not, hello, my name is Heather. I've loved your work. Or anything like that. I was like, please just stand right here. I have to find my husband. I'll be right back. And I was like, that's cool. That's cool, Heather. Well done. Well, good adulting. Good adulting.
Yeah. I always scream like an 8-year-old girl myself.
Right. Oh, we also met Francesca face-to-face at StokerCon, didn't we, Steve? Yeah, it is a great place to network, and it's a great place to hang out with not only writers but editors and people who format and people who market and people who love horror and read horror or fantasy or romance or whatever the convention is. Like, I can't. If you had the chance to go, no matter how small the convention in your local town is or the town next door, I think they're always worth going to, because you meet so many people. And we meet so many great publishers who have really helped us along the way when we've had questions.
So what's Terrify Your Tablet about? Let's talk about that.
Yes. Okay. So Lindsay at Horrorsmith has organized Terrify Your Tablet, and you can learn more details at terrifyyourtablet.com. And what's going to happen is, on October 31st, over 200 authors, and it's thriller, horror, I think there may even be some mystery, and all the subgenres within are offering up their ebooks for free. And the platform may change. Some of them will be on Amazon. Some might be on Apple or Nook. So it just depends on the author and where they have their ebook listed. But Horrorsmith at the Terrify Your Tablet website on about 2 days beforehand is going to upload a searchable list where you can search by author name or title or subgenre to find new books, new authors to you, and then you can go and download the book for free on the 31st. You do not have to have a paid subscription like to Kindle Unlimited. They'll be listed free outside of Kindle Unlimited if you're an Amazon user.
Right.
But it's Nook's doing, if the author has listed them with Barnes & Noble's Nook,
There's Apple, there's Kobo, there's Barnes & Noble Nook, and then Kindle. Yeah.
So whatever platform the author has their ebook listed on, I've heard BookFunnels, some of the authors are using BookFunnel to do it. So there'll be a link you can click on from the website that'll take you to that book, to the platform you're interested in downloading it in. And it's a great way to find new authors that you had never heard of, or a story you're not sure about. Like, you, the description looks interesting, but you normally wouldn't spend, you know, money to get the book. It's a great way to find a new author or a new subgenre that you really, really love. And as a reader, I love these events, and different genres throw different events throughout the year. But I have found so many authors that I will now buy the hardback the day it is released, because I love them so much that I will give them precious bookshelf space in the house. But I have found them through a lot of these, hey, we're doing a free Stuff Your Kindle Day, or a free Terrify Your Tablet Day, or free Cozy Mystery Day. And they're fantastic events, and they're lots of fun. And I'll tell you, if you're on TikTok and you start following the hashtags, it's almost like being in a book club or at a book event, like an author signing, because the TikTok booker, TikTokers, TikTok bookers, book, I don't know what the right
talk.
Word is.
Book talk.
Yes, book talk. They get so excited about books that they've combed through the list and they're going to get, and they'll share their lists. And then, you know, six weeks later, they'll share their update about what they read and what they loved and who's going on the new favorite author list. And it's just, it's a really exciting event, not only the day of, but it's also a really exciting event weeks afterwards, when you see people start reading books and sharing their reviews of books and what they loved and what they didn't love and why they loved it or why they didn't love it, what made them cry, what made them sleep with the lights on. Like, it's just a fun, I mean, listen, I'm a book lover. So if you've got a book kind of thing, I'm down for it. I'm a reader first, I think, and a publisher second. And much to Steve's horror. But I do. I mean,
can't wait for his book.
Yeah. It's going to be titled Beat Surviving Heather. Yeah. It'll be his memoir. But I do. I love stuff like this. And Lindsay has done an amazing job of organizing this event. And it got a lot bigger than I think she thought it would. And she's really just taken it in stride. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see it happen. And I think it'll be a good time. And it'll be all day. So, you know, you wake up in the morning on Halloween, you know, take your first hour. This is horrible. I don't know if I should admit this out loud, especially with Steve on the call. But sometimes on these events, I will set my alarm to go off at 1 o'clock in the morning and sneak out of the bedroom and go download a bunch of books for like an hour and a half. Like, I'll make a cup of coffee and spend an hour and a half doing this and then go back to bed for a couple hours. And here's the best part. My mom is the same way. We were literally just doing this with Cozy Mystery. And I mean, like, we will send each other links to books we think the other one would like. And it's just so much fun. The more friends that you can get involved in it, it's just a good time. It's just a good time.
So listen, Heather, do you have issues trying to separate the voices in your head and real voices?
No. And here's why. They're all real voices. Don't tell the voices in my head they're not real. That's the quickest way to start a fight. There's no problem at all. They're all real voices. We respect all the voices in my head and outside.
Well, yeah, respect is a good thing.
That's right.
I just wanted to know if there was, you know, medications for this.
Hey, listen. People think all the time that I'm kind of the fun-loving girl. Steve could tell you a much different story.
But, Yeah. We can tell.
You can see. You can read between the lines.
You're like my mother running around psycho screaming, and then the phone rings and picks up the phone. Hello.
Oh, boy. The kid could tell you stories. Yeah. But listen, this is what happens when you put peanut butter on the dining room table. People have to eat at 3 hours later. You know, I mean.
You know. Yeah, and then you throw the cat on.
Right. It's not unfounded.
And the cat screams and runs all over and spreads the peanut butter all over the house.
Everywhere. I'm telling you, every voice in my head has been hard-earned. Hard-earned.
I'm a good kid. Well, listen, so where do people find you besides, you know, these dark alleys and stuff? Like, where you guys have social
media? So we've got a website. It's bridgeescapepress.com. And we're also on Twitter, is now called X. But we're on X, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and TikTok. I mean, I'm just going to tell you, I feel like that the 2 hours of my day every day is the social media stuff. But yeah, you can find us in all those places.
Yeah, me too. I'm in all of them. I'll look for you on TikTok.
Yeah.
I dance on there.
Now, does Dave do karate on TikTok? That's the big question I do, actually. Have.
But the family, they keep taking him down. He goes against community stand guidelines.
Yeah, that has happened to me.
Violating community guidelines.
Violating community standards. I'm too violent.
You can post guns and threaten lives and put you know, naked bodies, but Dave doing karate. I'm sorry, sir. I'm taking that down.
A step too far.
Yeah, you're just going one step too far, bud.
Mm-hmm. I've danced on TikTok too.
Yeah.
Then they threw me out.
Yeah, I can see why.
I'm gonna have to up my TikTok game. I didn't know. We could do book dances.
Yeah, you gotta get on there.
Yeah,
book dances. It makes all the difference. You know, I got all sorts of nuts. I got lots of nuts following me on TikTok. So TikTok users, please unfollow me.
Well, Heather, maybe you can make a happy acceptance dance for books.
Oh yeah, acceptance day dance. That would be fun.
Well, there you go. Yeah, you know, get your dog on there, start walking, and
riding.
Well, we're going to put all of your links up there so people can find it real easy. And we appreciate you being on the show. And check out their website. There's some great books. We've had some great interviews from some of your authors, and that's fantastic. So we've got Heather and Stephen Ventura, and it's Bridget Gates Press. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us. We had a good time. I'm glad you guys all got a little bit of time to talk while I was here.
I didn't even know you were here.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.